Our study continues in the 22nd chapter of 1 Samuel. Last time we got down into the 10th verse, and the setting for this passage is that David is now in hiding. He's in a place called the Forest of Hereth. He has about 400 men with him who are men of not very good reputation. They were discontented or debtors, or for some reason they were in some kind of distress. But anyway, these 400 men were with David now, and he's also sent his parents over into Moab for their protection so that they'll be in a safe place, having to leave their home country of Israel because of the wrath of Saul. Saul has declared open war upon David, and so he is now trying to find just where David is. He's trying to locate him so that he can go after him, and he begins to put his servants and his subjects through an inquisition, asking them if they have given David some kind of help, if they have any idea where he may be, if they have conspired with him in his pact with Jonathan, and accusing them. And it seems that if somebody doesn't come forward and give him some kind of positive information about David, that he's going to be able to charge him with being guilty of aiding and abetting David, which of course would not be true at all. But this is the atmosphere that Saul has created now among his servants. So in verse 9, then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub. So, as we know, Doeg was there when David received some help from the high priest. The high priest gave him some bread and gave him a sword, and he also prayed to God for him. And this man Doeg, who was an Edomite, he just a proselyte to the Israelite religion, he observed this, so now he tells Saul about it. But he didn't tell Saul all the truth. He just told Saul the things that would inflame Saul that much more. Verse 10, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Now these things are all true here. Ahimelech did inquire of the Lord for him, and he did feed him bread, and he did give him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. But he did it as a result of David having not told him the truth. David told him he was on a mission of the king. And so Ahimelech had every reason to believe that in assisting David, he was also assisting Saul. He did no act at all that was disrespectful to or unfaithful to Saul himself. For he felt in his heart that David truly was a servant of Saul and on a secret mission of Saul. That's what David told him. If Doeg had simply told Saul this, if he'd included the whole truth here, it may be that Saul would not have become so inflamed and so absolutely insane in his actions. And of course, had Saul not just made such an accusation to his servants, had he not practically indicted everyone who didn't give him some information about David, Doeg probably wouldn't have told him about this to begin with, because he held the information back to this point. He hadn't willingly volunteered it up to this point, but now he felt compelled to do something to clear himself as simply just an innocent bystander. And so he does tell Saul this, and it greatly inflamed Saul. We see in verse 11, then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob, and they came all of them to the king. So they had no reason to fear. They'd done nothing wrong that they knew of. They had no reason to run and hide. Had they known what was in store for them, they could have gone and joined the forces of David. But they didn't do this. They had acted in all good faith and all good conscience. They had simply taken David at his word. They had good knowledge of the fact that David was a man who had been in Saul's court and who had been held in very high favor in the land and among Saul and his people. And so they came at the bidding of the king. Had they known what the king had in store, then no doubt they would have fled the scene. And of course, the other priests that were in Nob, they had done nothing. They weren't even involved in the situation with David that is in question here. It was only one priest, the high priest Ahimelech. And Saul said, hear now, thou son of Ahitub. So he doesn't even give him the honor of calling him the priest, especially the high priest. He doesn't refer to his honorable and high office, but he calls him the son of Ahitub. And he says, hear now. And he entered "Here I am, my lord." So the priest was certainly continuing to be the servant of Saul, and he calls him that, "Here I am, my lord." And Saul said unto him, "Why have you conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and hast inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait at this day?" Now, of course, this charge is not entirely true. Ahimelech had nothing to do with David's lying in wait, had nothing to do with David fleeing from Saul, had nothing to do with aiding David knowingly in anything against Saul. So Ahimelech gives his answer in verse 14. Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, "And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house?" He just answers him this way, "Why, what do you mean I'm aiding David to lie in wait against you, and that he should rise against you in any kind of way? Why, who is more honorable and who is more faithful among all your servants is David? Why, he's your son-in-law. You let him marry your daughter, and he goes at your bidding. We've known of him upon many occasions doing things that you'd ask him to do. He's one of the most faithful, one of the most loyal of all, and he's honorable in your house. He has a very high position here. How can this be that I'm assisting him in rising up against you? How can this be that I'm at all unfaithful to you in helping David? Who's more honorable than David is?" Then he says in verse 15, "Did I then begin to inquire for God for him?" That's the reason I prayed to God for him. That's the reason I assisted him in any way, only on the grounds that he was an honorable man, only on the grounds that he had been a very faithful servant to you, and that he was someone most useful to you. Now, he could have said, "David lied to me." He could have run the character of David down here had he wanted to, but Ahimelech didn't do this. He only spoke of the high and honorable things of David. He didn't say anything against David, although he could have done so because David did mislead him. But he only speaks of David in a very high manner. And he says it was only in the light of David being this kind of a character that I then did inquire of God for him. But he says, "Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father, for thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more." He says, I'm not involved in this political dispute. Be it far from me. I'm not taking any kind of sides with David against you. I knew nothing about this. Me nor any of my father's house. We're not aware of the political implications. We're not aware of the problems you and David are having. And so do not impute anything to me about this. For I knew nothing of this, less or more. I was not aware of you and David having any kind of problem. I only acted in good faith toward you when I helped David. So Ahimelech gave him a very good answer, gave him a very truthful answer, and one that any reasonable person would have to have certainly considered as strong evidence toward the innocency of the high priest. But let's notice Saul. Saul in his anger and his wrath and his madness, how he conducts this. In verse 16, "And the king said, Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house." So he pronounces the sentence of death upon Ahimelech and all his father's house. The other priests weren't even involved in this problem at all. They had nothing to do with David, according to our narrative, but yet all of the priests have the sentence of death placed upon them by Saul. So we see here where Saul now is acting as not only the one who is the defendant, the one who is has been wronged, but he's also acting as the judge, and he's also acting as the juror. He is passing sentence upon this man that he brought a personal charge against, and so there is no other party involved in the trial or in the sentence. And we can see this is very muchly against the principles of trial and law and what is fair and right. The king is mad at Ahimelech, so he uses his position to try him and to pronounce the sentence of death upon him. And, of course, it's only been a very short while back until the high priest had a lot of this authority. And the high priest could have been doing much of what Saul was now doing, but Saul uses his office as king to override all of this, and he takes no consideration for the fact that the man is high priest, and the man has any kind of rights at all, and he pronounces a sentence of death upon him. Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house. Surely, had this trial been conducted before a jury would have freed Ahimelech based upon the evidence that was given here. Surely, had a more reasonable person than Saul been conducting the trial, it would have been conducted in such a way to have brought out the innocency of Ahimelech. And this could have been seen quite readily by a person with a clear mind. But not so in the case of Saul. Saul has now completely left God. Saul has no regard for what's right or what's wrong. Saul simply has one objective in mind, and that is to destroy David and to destroy any that get in his way of getting at David. And so he takes this opportunity to take out a lot of his vengeance and wrath and frustrations upon the priests and his family, and he pronounces the sentence of death. And the king said unto the footmen that stood about him, Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled, and did not show it to me. So now Saul asked his footmen, the very lowest of his servants, to turn and to slay Ahimelech. He not only asked them to do that, he commands them to do that. And he says, slay the priests of the Lord. Now he has no feeling whatsoever for the fact that these are the priests of the Lord, and he recognizes them as that, as he tells them that they are to be slain. He turns not to the highest and the mightiest and the most valiant of his men to do this, but to the very lowest, to the footmen. And he summarizes his charge, because their hand is with David, which is not true at all. They were not with David at this time. They were not doing anything against the king. And he says, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me. But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. These footmen refused to carry out this order. They would not put the priests of the Lord to death. Now this should have told Saul something. This should have been a check to Saul to make his footmen rebel against him, to put their own lives in jeopardy, to put their high positions in the kingdom in danger, to put their families' lives in danger. Was a very grave thing, and they would have had to have had a very good reason to have done that. But nevertheless, they did rebel. They would not put their hand forth to fall upon the priest of the Lord. And this was a rebellion against Saul right here, but it was because it was such a grave injustice, such a glaring example of wrongdoing that these men couldn't bring themselves to do it. And this should have been a check upon Saul, but it wasn't. And the king said to Doeg, Turn thou and fall upon the priests. So here now Doeg, the very one who was the accuser, the one who seemed to have been the only witness against the priests, he then is asked to turn and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priests, and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. So there were 85 priests killed upon that day. And it seems from the reading here that Doeg did it all with his own hand. He may have had some others that assisted him, but the text is not clear on that. But 85 persons that were priests that did wear a linen ephod, that is, they were of age to fully serve as priests. And this was a very great and unjust slaughter. It was a slaughter that was brought about by the anger of Saul. And it demonstrates now that Saul had completely lost all regard for God and the things of God. Saul was now strictly on his own. It is a good example of how the mind can be overcome by sin and by evil thoughts, so that God is no longer even a consideration in what is done. And we see this happening all the time, even today. There are persons who are so far gone from God that their actions are not even remotely tempered by the feelings and by the teachings and by the desires of God. Man goes about his way, he does what he wants in the way that he wants, and has no feeling whatsoever for the things of God. And so that is the case here. Verse 19, And Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword both men and women, children and sucklings, and oxen, and asses, and sheep, with the edge of the sword. So he also slew all the people in the city of Nob, the city of the priests. That's the city where the tabernacle was. That's the city where the greatest concentration of priests would be at this time to serve in the tabernacle. And not only them, but the women and the children and the sucklings, the very smallest of the babies. And then all the animals, the oxen, asses, and sheep were slain. So it was a very complete and brutal slaughter brought about by Saul and his servant Doeg. But as terrible as this slaughter was, as unjust as it seems to have been, we find that here is the hand of God working. For if we look back in the third chapter of 1 Samuel, we see that God has told Eli that his house would have this to happen. Because of the wickedness of Eli, because of the neglectfulness of Eli, because he allowed his sons to be so wicked and to continue to serve in that capacity of priest, God then is going to bring a terrible action against all the house of Eli. And so in 1 Samuel chapter 3, beginning with the 12th verse, let's notice, In that day I will perform against Eli all the things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. And therefore I have sworn unto the house of Eli, that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering forever. So Eli then had this curse upon him and his house. And so this is really just a fulfillment of that. The word of the Lord does not fall by the wayside. When God speaks something that's going to happen, then it does happen. And so this is really, although it's brought about by the anger and insanity of Saul, it's really a fulfilling of the things that God said would happen to the house of Eli. But we find a very interesting thing in verse 20. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. So one of the priests did escape, one of the sons of Ahimelech. Probably Abiathar had been left behind to attend to the things of the tabernacle, while Ahimelech and the other priests had gone after the bidding of Saul. And so when he learned what had happened, the slaughter of the priests, 85 priests put to death, and then before Doeg had time to come into the city of Nob and complete the slaughter, he made an escape. Now, he fled after David. Here, the priests were suffering greatly because of kindnesses that had been done to David. They had assisted David. Now they were having to suffer like it was intended by Saul for David to suffer. And so he then appropriately fled after David. So when he suffered for David, he looked to David for refuge. And so it is with us today. When we suffer for Christ, we look to Christ for refuge. Christ is our refuge. He is our shield. He is our salvation. And verse 21 says, And Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priests. So he told David what had happened. He told David the terrible feat that had been carried out by Doeg as a result of Saul's command. And he states it here that Saul had slain the Lord's priest. It was actually a result of Saul that this happened. And so Saul is held fully responsible for it. Although it does not alleviate Doeg's responsibility either. And David said unto Abiathar, I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul. So he knew it in his heart that the man Doeg, who had witnessed what had happened when Ahimelech helped him, he knew that he was going to tell. He just sensed that this would be a bad thing for Doeg to know about this. And so he calls him Doeg the Edomite. For although he was a proselyte to the religion of God, he was an Edomite at heart. And so he says, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. It's really my fault. I'm the one that has helped to bring this about. So he tells Abiathar, Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life, but with me thou shalt be in safeguard. So David felt very strongly that he could give protection to this man, to this faithful priest. And he said, the same one that seeks your life also seeks my life. So as I protect myself, I will also, in effect, then be protecting you. So he said, thou shalt be in safeguard. And so it is with us today, when we flee to the Son of David, our Savior, our Lord Jesus Christ, then we shall be in safeguard. Those that seek to do us harm then are also seeking to do him harm. And he's going to, in defense of himself, also then be protecting us. Now when David learned about this bad news, about what Doeg had done, he wrote the 52nd Psalm. And we get a reflection of what his true feelings are as we read this 52nd Psalm. Why boastest thou thyself in mischief, O mighty man? The goodness of God endureth continually. Thy tongue deviseth mischiefs like a sharp razor working deceitfully. Thou lovest evil more than good, and lying rather than to speak righteousness. Thou lovest all devouring words, O thou deceitful tongue. God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away, and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place, and root thee out of the land of the living. The righteous also shall see and fear, and shall laugh at him. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and strengtheneth himself in his wickedness. But I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it, and I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. So that's the 52nd Psalm. And so we see while David is hidden here, while he's in a state of fleeing for his life and trying to defend himself, he then has time for God. He has time for meditation. He has time to act as a prophet and to receive the message of God. And he was continuing in his work, such as this writing of the 52nd Psalm. When it seemed that the priesthood was in a shambles, he said, I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. So this gave no less reason for David to worship and to praise God. He was like a green olive tree in the house of God. And so today when we find that the church is seemingly weak many times, we can be like a green olive tree in the house of God. We can continually be worshiping and praising and serving God. That's all of our time for this segment of the study. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.